Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We continue now with our coverage of next Tuesday's New York State congressional primaries. As a reminder, there are six races in our area that experts have identified as more competitive than usual. Five on the Democratic side, one on the Republican side. The Republicans have that intense primary on Staten Island and a bit of South Brooklyn between the incumbent Dan Donovan and his predecessor, the former congressman, former FBI agent, and former tax fraud convict Michael Grimm, where they seem to be competing to see who can snuggle up more closely to Donald Trump. On the Democratic side, New York City incumbents Carolyn Maloney, Yvette Clarke, Elliot Engel, and Joe Crowley are all facing energetic primary challengers. Plus, in the Hudson Valley District, where Republican John Faso is the incumbent, seven Democrats are competing in a very spirited primary in this possible blue wave midterm election year when Faso is seen as vulnerable. Our correspondent, Robert Lewis, has a very good piece on the WNYC website right now about the Hudson Valley race. Back down here in the city, Carolyn Maloney's challenger is Suraj Patel, president of a hotel management company. Elliot Engel's challenger is Jonathan Lewis, a Scarsdale Municipal Bond Investment Company founder. Joe Crowley's challenger is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. We will have both Crowley and Ocasio-Cortez on Monday's show. Right now, we'll give short interviews to Congresswoman Yvette Clarke and her challenger, Adam Bunkadeko. One thing that makes this race newsworthy is that it's the only one of these Democratic races in which the New York Times has endorsed the challenger. Mr. Bunkadeko, the Times says Congresswoman Clark's legislative accomplishments have been regrettably far between. Now, this is for the 9th Congressional District. Prospect Park is in this district with part of Park Slope on the west, and east through Crown Heights into Brownsville, and south through Flatbush and elsewhere in central Brooklyn, down to the Belt Parkway around Gerritsen Beach and Sheepshead Bay. So with me first is the incumbent, Yvette Clarke, who was first elected to the seat in 2006. Congresswoman, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you for having me, Brian. It's great to be with you once again.
Well, let's go right to why the Times says it's not endorsing you for re-election, that you haven't accomplished very much. What would you cite right now as your three biggest accomplishments in your 12 years in Congress?
Well, I think that certainly the Affordable Care Act and the role that I played as a member of the Education and Labor Committee, making sure that my amendment to expand the healthcare workforce was a key component of that legislation. Of course, fighting to make sure that that legislation was passed and maintained throughout this very administration. Secondly, I would say it was my fight alongside my colleagues to get relief for those in the district who were hit tremendously by Superstorm Sandy. That was a major undertaking because we were, of course, in a majority Republican Congress that has been extremely, disdainful of New York City, of New York State, and had really made a determination that they were not going to help the Northeast after Superstorm Sandy, given the fiscal austerity measures that were in place after the crash of the economy. And so if those would be two, but there have been most recently legislative accomplishments on my end where on the House floor, I've been able to pass two very important pieces of legislation to combat the opioid addiction crisis in not only my district, but across the United States. And I think that those accomplishments, along with the fact that I have been in a minority as a member of Congress for the past 8 years, I have been tremendous for the 9th Congressional District of New York.
when you list the Affordable Care Act and Sandy relief as the big two, a critic could say these were massive party-wide efforts. Everybody on the Democratic side was fighting for the Affordable Care Act. Everybody was fighting for Sandy relief. This doesn't show any particular individual accomplishment on your part.
Well, you know, it takes a very vocal, very strong member to be able to convince their colleagues that this is the way to go. And understanding the legislative process here in Washington, I think that it's important that my constituents and people of goodwill across this nation recognize that these are Herculean tasks. And to be able to get an amendment into the Affordable Care Act as a junior, or really a freshman member, is a feat that not every member of Congress or in the Democratic conference can accomplish.
So when you say that amendment was to expand the healthcare workforce, what does that mean?
That means that we recognize that once we were able to cover all Americans, have them have access to health insurance, we needed to make sure that the workforce to meet the demands of those who would be going into to receive care was in place. So that, you know, from registered nurses to primary care physicians, we recognize that ultimately there is a shortage in these areas.
So more funding for more jobs in the healthcare
sector. Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. And my district happens to be a district where many healthcare professionals reside, many who've been trained in the various allied healthcare professions. And so I thought this was an opportunity, not only across this nation where healthcare is needed, but for the 9th Congressional District, those who have been seeking opportunities to use their talent, use their expertise in healthcare, would now have those corridors opened up for for them to be utilized.
Would you say you and your challenger have any differences on issues that you would point to, or is this not about that?
To be honest with you, I don't know much about my opponent because he's fairly new in terms of reaching out, in terms of articulating his positions. What I can say is what I have heard of him, there is no real tangible difference that I can discern. The things that he's been articulating, I've heard many of my constituents articulate. I've heard much of our leadership in the Democratic Party articulate. So what I can discern from what he said is a parroting of what many in our party have been saying, and in terms of policy, have been pursuing.
You were quoted in the Times saying your challenger is not part of the bench of young people committed to their community and public service. But the Times says he has managed Democratic congressional campaigns and helped low-income families in Brooklyn as a community organizer. So how do you back up your charge that he's not part of that community service bench?
Let me put it this way. I've yet to see him be engaged in any campaigns in central Brooklyn. It's my understanding that he did some campaign work in Arkansas. Secondly, you know, there are so many young people in our community who are working for nonprofit organizations who are really showing that they are public servants. And the work that my opponent claims has not been specific to the 9th Congressional District, whereas my work has been very specific from days before I was even elected to addressing the concerns of the people of the 9th Congressional District, starting very early on with my tenure at the Erasmus Neighborhood Federation, helping tenants to organize their buildings, helping health family daycare providers establish their programs in their homes to provide childcare to residents, I've yet to see or hear from anyone in my constituency where my opponent has been a direct benefit to the work, to their concerns. It's just never been proven. These are what he's asserted.
I gotcha.
There is no evidence to back it up.
Let me jump in for time's sake. Mr. Bunkadeko was quoted in the Times today referring to your mother, former city councilwoman Una Clark. He said, quote, "The mom was a city councilwoman and she," meaning you, "went ahead and inherited her mom's seat. When it came time for the congressional, the mom helped push her in." What would you say to that charge of dynastism in your family?
You know, listen, I've had to earn my way into office. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it would be characterized that way. You know, there is no doubt that my mother served in the New York City Council for 10 years. And I worked very closely with her, but also blazed a trail separate and apart from hers of public service to my district. I have been born and raised in this community, and every opportunity that I had to give back to the residents of this community, I pursued on my own. I am actually very proud to follow in the footsteps of my mom and of the Honorable Shirley Chisholm, the Honorable Major R. Owens. These are leaders that I grew up, really admiring and working very closely with, because I knew what was at stake for our communities, and my passion for the people that I represent was fostered through working very closely with these elected officials, including my mother. I'm extremely proud.
Let me ask you, as
Dr. Clark has provided this pathway and this support that I need to be able to elevate my leadership in this district.
As a last question, looking ahead, some critics of Trump who are still frustrated with the Democratic Party say it's not enough to rip Trump's character and policies. The Dems need a better alternative vision. What are you running on as the top Democratic policies if the party wins control of the House? And what does it mean to you to be a Democrat? What does the party stand for at the deepest level?
Yeah, this party stands for inclusion. It stands for values of opportunity and access and government that is there to be of support to the populace. And I believe that, first of all, my campaign is to make sure that, one, we pass comprehensive immigration reform, which is so sorely needed right now. Our district is in the crosshairs of this administration, whether it's the revoking of temporary protected status for so many who are a part of the fabric of our district, whether it's the DACA young people who just want to make things good with this nation and then on their pathway to citizenship.
And then, forgive me, because we're out of time, what other one priority in addition to immigration reform?
Yeah, well, I would also say affordable housing. There's no doubt in my mind that right now, with the level of development that's taking place in this district, the need for truly affordable housing for working class people whose wages have not kept up with the cost of living is an imperative. And so I am fighting very hard. I've introduced legislation, the Hardest Hit Housing Act of 2018, to put down a marker for the type of funding that, when we get back to house, will be required to help help people across this nation who are in very, very similar circumstances to those of us in central Brooklyn that need this type of support.
All right. 30 seconds for a pitch, and I mean 30 seconds, to the constituents. Why you deserve re-election?
I deserve re-election because my constituents know I have been fighting each and every day since this Trump administration has come into place for human dignity. I am focused like a laser on the needs, the desires, the American dream that so many in this district have either come to this nation seeking or have wanted to make sure that their families can enjoy the benefits of their labor, their hard work, their commitment to the to the community. And so I am very focused. I'm committed and indeed recognize that the 9th Congressional District is a very special place. It's a place that I was born and raised in, a place that I've lived in all my life. And my commitment to the people of this district has been unwavering. And I'm focused and I'm asking for their continued support as we fight the Trump agenda in Washington, D.C.
Congresswoman Yvette Clark, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And joining me now, Congresswoman Clark's challenger, Adam Bunkadeko, in next Tuesday's congressional primary in that district that runs roughly from Prospect Park and Park Slope on the west to Bed-Stuy on the east and down to Sheepshead Bay and Gerritsen Beach. Adam Bunkadeko, welcome to WNYC. And first of all, am I saying your name right?
Yes, you are. Thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure to be on for the first time.
And since you're a newcomer to the public eye, introduce yourself a little more to our listeners, if you would. Where do you live, and what have you done in your life that qualifies you to be in Congress?
Sure. So I live in Crown Heights. I've lived here all of my adult life. I was born and raised in the city to two war refugees from Uganda. My father came to this country with $50. I was born and raised. I was fortunate to attend public school as a child in this city. I was fortunate to earn scholarships to go to private school, Haverford College, and Harvard Business School. I've spent my entire career trying to repay back their sacrifice as folks who are two social workers, trying to make a difference in the lives of folks who are the most vulnerable among us in this district. So I started off as an organizer, helping working families, fighting for issues and causes that I thought were going to make a difference in their lives. Moved on to a local nonprofit here in Central Brooklyn called Bed-Stuy Restoration Corporation, helping single mothers find after-school programs for their children. From there, went off to state government, helping to revitalize some of the most distressed parts of Central Brooklyn. Brooklyn Navy Yard is a key project I helped bring online, which helped create hundreds of jobs for folks who live in Flatbush, who live in Crown Heights, who live in East Flatbush. And I just recently left Brooklyn Community Services, where I was Associate Director for Business Initiatives, helping folks with special needs find meaningful employment. So I've been really centered in this community and also been a member of the Community Board, which covers Prospect Heights, Crown Heights, and Weeksville for close to 6 years. So I found Ms. Clark's claim not a little, but false in terms of saying that I had no record of service in the community.
One of the critiques of your entering this specific race is that young politicians usually work their way up to Congress through lower offices. Congresswoman Clark was in city council first. Congressman Akeem Jeffries from a neighboring district, who was in the state assembly first, says Shirley Chisholm, Barack Obama, and Charles Rangel are all examples of people who ran for lower office before Congress. You probably saw that quote of him in the Times today. How would you respond to Congressman Jeffries?
I have great respect for Mr. Jeffries, and I look forward to working alongside him in Congress to deliver in Central Brooklyn. But the value of so-called experience set up by the political establishment hasn't gotten us anywhere. We have a Congress member who was elected to city council with the support of her mother, and that experience hasn't helped her get anything done for our community in Congress. She's yet to initiate a bill and pass it into law. And the New York Times editorial board had mentioned that. Her experience is not leading to change in our community. In terms of Shirley Chisholm and Barack Obama, they're among the many inspirations for why I've chosen to run. Imagine someone telling Shirley Chisholm to wait in line as an African-American woman in the late 60s. She would have never made it to Congress. Imagine just going back to 2008 when the entire establishment told the then Senator Obama that it wasn't his turn. It was Hillary's turn. Yet he went on to become one of our great presidents. So with all due respect, I have to disagree with Representative Jeffries and his interpretation of that. Change doesn't happen if people wait their turn. If we want change, we have to take it upon ourselves to be the catalyst for it.
You just mentioned again Congresswoman Clark's mother, who had been in city council, and then Congresswoman Clark took that seat when Una Clark, her mom, retired or was term limited. But Congresswoman Clark has been elected to 6 2-year terms by this point. So at what point is it illegitimate to say she's in office because of her mother?
No, I think for the initial push was there when she first won, but, you know, it's been a continuous theme throughout. And I think that arrangement is something that we really need to reconsider in Brooklyn. And to me, I don't see the progress that we need in this community or the progress that we need to make. Take, for instance, housing. We have a number of issues on public housing that have been falling apart. And I don't think it's been worthwhile for us to have this sort of dynamic in place, because the folks who need the representation in Washington haven't been getting it. And, you know, again, I have great respect for Dr. Clark, her mother, and I have respect for Ms. Clark as well. But I think the time has come for change.
Congresswoman Clark said in our interview that she knows of no policy differences between herself and you, though she doesn't know your record on everything all that well because you're a newcomer. Would you identify any policy differences or issue differences with Congresswoman Clark?
I think, look, as per progressive Democrats, we're going to agree on a lot of the issues. The question is effectiveness. You can put Donald Duck in the seat. They're going to vote the right way if they're representing Central Brooklyn. But the question is, how are we being an effective advocate for those in our community, whether they live in Park Slope, whether they live in Brownsville, whether they live in Sheepshead Bay? And the effectiveness is what I take real great question with, because we've got a number of folks who are finding it difficult to keep a roof over their head, to put food on the table, to find a decent place to live. They are finding it difficult to continue to call this community home. So in terms of the policy differences, take, for instance, housing. I'm in favor of not only making sure that we have 100% affordable housing, but making sure that we're providing a pathway to ownership for many in our community who are worried about whether or not they're going to have long-term tenure here. That's a different component, and I think a far more bolder and more daring approach to housing than, say, Ms. Clark's ideas on it. And that's the kind of thing that we need to get done in Congress. It isn't simply about saying the right things. It's about doing and getting these things done.
This is also supposed to be a year of the woman in congressional elections. And for many voters in Democratic primaries, as well as in general elections this year, I imagine there would be a high bar to support any man over a woman running for the same office, all things being equal. So what would you say? Do you feel bad in any way about a man trying to supplant a progressive Democratic African-American woman at this time?
I was raised by a village of strong black women. My mother as head of the tribe, and I'd be the first to tell you that I want to see a sister in power. I want to see them in positions of influence, making sure they're fighting for our communities. But my mother will also be the first to tell you that if you aren't doing the job, you got to go. And the group that's been hurt the most as a result of Ms. Clark's inactivity has been working-class women, in particular working-class women of color, working-class women of color who live in public housing, working-class women of color who will worry about whether or not their children are going to be disproportionately affected by criminal justice, or whether or not loved ones who are immigrants are going to be deported by ICE. So for me, we got to go out there and have an energetic advocate for the women who fight in our community every single day. And I learned that from my mom and my aunties.
Some critics of Trump who are frustrated with the Democratic Party say it's not enough to rip Trump's character and policies. The Dems need a better alternative vision. What are you running on as the top Democratic parties if the party wins control? I asked the same question to Congresswoman Clark, and she cited immigration reform and housing legislation.
Absolutely. I think on housing, again, it's not enough to just say that we want affordable housing, but what is that affordable housing going to look like, and what kind of coalitions are you going to build in Congress, whether or not Democrats or Republicans control, in order to enact that agenda? That's why I believe our Mitchell Lama program, similar the program that I want to introduce that's similar to the Mitchell Lama program we have here in the state, is the kind of thing that we can build coalitions across the aisle, because Brooklyn is not alone in terms of the housing crisis that we're going through. We've got folks in Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, communities all across major metropolitan areas that are going through enormous change, and working class folks are bearing the burden. But to your point about the Democrats and the vision that we need to go forward, you're totally right. We cannot just simply be a party that is about saying no to Trump. We have got to be a party that stands up for the social contract in this country, which this administration seems to be hell-bent on tearing apart. And my concern is that we need to have folks out there who are going to not only articulate that vision, but talk about how they're going to get it done on a district-by-district basis. Because what is at stake right now is the existential battle for the soul of this country. And my worry is that if we don't put the best people out there, we might actually lose that battle.
30 seconds, and I mean 30 seconds, for your closing elevator pitch on why people should vote for you next Tuesday, primary day in the 9th Congressional District against the incumbent Yvette Clark in Brooklyn.
It's really simple. The status quo hasn't worked. For over 12 years, for over a decade, Ms. Clark's record has not been one that has been what this community needs and deserves. I've outlined a vision, whether it's on housing, criminal justice, immigration, infrastructure, all the key issues that affect us in this community. And on Tuesday, we're going to have a choice whether or not we should turn the page and move forward, or we should stick with what we've got, which hasn't worked.
Adam Bunkadeko, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.